Paper number two, for those of you on radio land. Thomas?
Thank you, Wayne. Yeah, at its meeting in May 2013, the IFRS Interpretations Committee discussed three approaches that could be the basis for an amendment to IAS 12 to clarify the accounting for deferred tax assets for unrealized losses on debt instruments measured at fair value. The Interpretations Committee decided to recommend to the ISB one of these approaches as the basis for an amendment to IAS 12. This approach would result in the recognition of deferred tax assets for unrealized losses on debt instruments measured at fair value, unless recovering the debt instrument by holding it until the unrealized loss reverses does not reduce future tax payments and instead only avoids higher tax losses. The Interpretations Committee noted that the different approaches would result in significantly different amendments to IAS 12. The Interpretations Committee therefore asked the staff to consult the ISB members on possible approaches that could be the basis for the amendment. We did that in various meetings in October 2013, and the purpose of this discussion of the Interpretations Committee is therefore to develop an approach on how to clarify the accounting for deferred tax assets for unrealized losses on debt instruments measured at fair value. In this context, we have drawn on feedback from ISB members when developing our proposals to help us identify whether there are further issues, arguments, or concerns that we think that the Interpretations Committee should consider before proposing a clarification to the ISB. We think that the clarification of the accounting for deferred tax assets for unrealized losses on debt instruments measured at fair value should first of all consist of an illustrative example. Such an illustrative example would address the issue raised with the Interpretations Committee by illustrating the application of IAS 12 on the basis of a scenario in which the issue is relevant in practice. The illustrative example would explain what aspects of IAS 12 are being applied and why. Other amendments to IAS 12 should, in our view, only be made if the clarification through an illustrative example is insufficient. We think that the illustrative example should be drafted considering the assumption listed in paragraph 7 of staff paper 2A for this meeting and addressing the aspects listed in paragraphs 8 to 51 of staff paper 2A for this meeting. We recommend this approach for clarification for the following reason. First of all, we understand from the discussions of the Interpretations Committee on this issue that the existing principles in IAS 12 result in an appropriate reflection of deferred tax assets for unrealized losses on debt instruments measured at fair value in the financial statements. Second, we do not think that the Interpretations Committee should change its recommendation considering the feedback from the consultation of the ISB members. Third, we understand from the analysis of the comment letters on the exposure draft annual improvements to IFRS's 2010 to 2012 cycle and from discussions with commentators and other interested parties that there is above all uncertainty about the application of some of the principles in IAS 12. And finally, several commentators on the exposure draft criticized that the exposure draft proposed three general clarifications to specify the accounting in a very specific fact pattern raised with the Interpretations Committee for clarification. In addition, we recommend the following amendments, other amendments to IAS 12 next to the illustrative example. First, paragraph 20 of IAS 12 should be amended to clarify that a temporary difference related to assets measured at fair value might reverse before the carrying amount of the asset is recovered. Second, paragraphs 24 and following of IAS 12 should be amended to clarify that probable future taxable profits against which deductible temporary differences are assessed for utilization exclude tax deductions for which tax deductible temporary differences exist in the current period. And finally, paragraphs 24 and the following of IAS 12 should be amended to clarify that an entity assumes to recover an asset for more than its carrying amount when estimating probable future taxable profits against which deductible temporary differences are assessed for utilization, provided such a recovery is probable. Consequently, we want to ask the following questions to the Interpretations Committee. First, do the Interpretations Committee members have any questions or comments on the status of the project or the feedback from the consultations with ISB members? And second, does the Interpretations Committee agree with the staff recommendation? If not, what alternative do you recommend?
Thomas, before we open this up, where do we stand? Refresh our memories. Where do we stand vis-a-vis the FASB on this issue? As I recall, they've taken a different position.
Yes, last year the FASB published an exposure draft proposing a separate assessment of the realization for deferred tax assets related to fair value through OCI financial assets. And they have summarized last summer the feedback on the exposure draft. And so far, not rediscussed their proposal.
Okay. But that would have been significantly different than where we are.
Yes.
Okay. What I'll do for people on the phone is we'll take a pass through the room first, and then I'll go to the phone. And Michael will poke me in the ribs if I forget that. So, comments, reactions? Laurence?
Just to support the staff in the direction you're going, Thomas. Obviously, and now I would like to see how this concretize, how this become amendments, examples, and particularly I like to see the amendments to IS-12 to make sure that by opening or by adding some of the stuff, we are not creating other consequences, but I'm happy where you are going. And I believe that examples are necessary.
Tony?
I also support the direction the staff's taking. I think the important clarification that the staff's approach brings forward is that you look at all of the profits of the entity to assess whether or not there are sufficient profits to recover this deductible temporary difference, and you don't look at the reversals associated with the assets in isolation. I think that's the important clarification, and I think an example will achieve that. Like Laurence, I think I'd like to see the other proposed clarifications, because my own sense is that IS-12 is probably clear enough about most of those. I just wonder whether, for example, to clarify that you look at taxable profit, including reversing temporary differences and whatever, first is absolutely necessary, because my sense is the standard is clear enough. But overall, I support the direction. I just, my sense, I wonder if all of the amendments that the staff have proposed are necessary.
Okay, let's go with Joanna, John, and Andrew.
Really just to say I support where Thomas and the staff are heading. The only query I have, and I'm peeking ahead at the next agenda item, is to ensure we are consistent between this and the next one, because I'm not sure the recommendations are at the moment.
Several of us have asked that question, and I think we've been assured that they are, but
yeah, it should be consistent, yeah.
John?
I support where the staff are going. Just a couple of things. I'm not sure that paragraph 20 does need to be amended to clarify that a temporary difference related to the assets might reverse before the carrying amount of the assets recovered, because recovery of the asset that's measured at fair value actually doesn't occur at settlement. It actually occurs over the life of the instrument through the cash flows that you're collecting. So to me, the temporary difference is automatically going to change because you're actually recovering the asset over its life, not at maturity. So I don't think paragraph 20 actually does need to be clarified.
I had the same reaction. Don't we see that all the time in depreciation differences? When
yes.
They'll reverse before you actually sell the asset. Yeah. Andrew?
Sorry, just one other point that I wanted to make. I still think the paper is not entirely clear about what the notion of reduce future tax payments and not increase future tax losses is. Because it sort of begs the question, if you do have capital gains tax system and an income tax system, what is the characteristic of the temporary difference? The way I think about it, and it's not brought out in the paper, is I think that if I have an instrument that I've written down to fair value of 900 and I'm going to hold it to maturity, I'm going to generate accounting income over the life of that instrument of 5%. Some of that is tax sheltered because I'm only going to pay tax on the coupon of 2%. To me, that's the economic benefit that's in the DTA. It's actually the sheltered accounting profit over the life of the instrument. But that's not brought out in the paper. And I think the notion of reducing future tax payments rather than increasing losses is that accounting profit going to result in an overall a taxable profit to the entity? And I think the paper could bring that out in the clarifications.
Andrew?
I have very similar comments to Giles. I think we need to change paragraph 20. I think the fact that if we do hold this debt asset and we collect the principal, that the fair value will pull to par. Of course, that does mean the temporary difference disappears, but that doesn't change the fact that the temporary difference exists at the reporting date, and that's the key point, as I would see it. Mm-hmm. And I guess similar to John's point about clarity of what we mean by increasing or decreasing future tax payments, the question underlying that is relative to what are we increasing or decreasing tax payments? In this example, again, if the fair value pulls to par, that's actually tax neutral. The downward valuation wasn't a tax deduction, and the reversal of, I think, 18 in the fact pattern, 82 compared to 100, that won't be a tax event. So there's some references in the paper to including that reversal in your forecast of future tax profits, but actually that's tax profit neutral, so just a bit of clarity around that will be helpful.
Okay. Martin and then Reinhard.
I support an example. However, I'm not sure about the mechanism. Would it be an amendment to IRS 12? And if so, if it would be an amendment, then we probably should also, and we will start with the next topic, further discussion, include other issues in a combined approach, where we believe that. More clarification is necessary and useful. So when I see topic number 3, we could also consider whether it would be worse to include additional guidance with examples or whatever we believe is necessary to get a uniform picture of how to apply IRS 12, because I guess for some aspects, IRS 12 is challenging.
Thomas, correct me if I'm wrong. I believe the staff's intention was to take these to the board as a package, to take all the stuff we're doing on 12 to the board as a package.
No. Actually, the intention was to, to bundle them in an exposure draft.
That's what I meant. Yeah.
Yes, okay. Exactly.
Reinhardt?
My comments are similar to the comments others have made. And I think it'll be important to see through the amendments to ensure that if the illustrative example brings out principles that need clarification, that be reflected in IS 12. So I think similar to the comments others have made, that'll be important to see. Just a couple of other things that I noted. The paper contemplates this being applicable only to debt instruments measured at fair value through OCI, and I was wondering why that was and why it wouldn't be similar for AFS instruments under IS 39, because I would have thought the principles should have been similar. And then secondly, one thing certainly I think is important to be careful of potentially unintended consequences, where other assets or liabilities are measured at fair value, would similar principles apply other than these, so that if, when people look at the amendments, whether they might apply that, say it should apply by analogy to other types of instruments at fair value, and just, I haven't thought it all the way through, but could there be potentially some unintended consequences?
We discussed that yesterday, and the question I had is, did you have any in mind? I wasn't thinking particularly about financial instruments, but were you worried about, for example, investment properties or revaluation under 16? Did you have something specific in mind? Or?
It's the non-financial instruments, to think about whether those same principles apply. And again, I haven't thought all the way through, but just to be careful as to whether there might be some unintended consequences.
Okay, let's go to the phone. Shelley?
No comments from me, thank you.
Okay, Sandy?
I agree with the development of an illustrative example. I guess I wanted to be clear, and you asked Thomas this at the beginning, and I wasn't crystal clear from the memo. But so we're saying that for U.S. GAAP, you would, just so I understand the difference, we're saying for U.S. GAAP, it's more likely that you would, if you were in a significant deferred tax or you're in a significant loss position, you are more likely to realize the deferred tax asset than you would under IFRS. Because you'd have to, if you had future taxable losses, is that my understanding correct?
Well, just to be clear, the probability that you'd realize it is identical. The question is whether you'd recognize it. Is that what you're driving at?
Yes, that's okay. What I'm saying. Yes.
Scott, did you want to come in on that?
I was just going to say what you just did, Wayne. Yeah, and under U.S. GAAP. We don't say you're more likely to realize it than under IFRS, but we let you recognize it anyways, even though you're not going to realize it. That might have been a little pejorative, but
yeah, sorry.
That's what I think U.S. GAAP does. Yes.
Okay.
Well, pending, Philippe?
I'd like to react to Reinhard's point regarding the example of drafting. So in the drafting, will you make reference to IFRS 9, fair value OCI category, or also to IAS 39, the IFRS? Because given the timing of the effective date of this clarification versus the effective date of IFRS 9, which we have not yet decided for the amendments to the fair value category, I think it would be more helpful to apply the clarification in the context of IAS 39 first, and then continue with IFRS 9.
Well, obviously, I think that's clear.
Yeah. And I think when we bring the example back to you, we can include just an assessment of how that would apply on a more general basis, which I think, Reinhard, is probably your concern, because some of these are some general clarifications that we're proposing here. Just one further point. The question was raised about the interaction with Agenda Paper 3, and absolutely Thomas and Leo have been talking with one another to make sure their proposals are their analyses are aligned, but our proposals in paper 3 are not to take these paper 3 items onto the agenda. Obviously, if after discussing paper 3 you take a different conclusion, then yes, we would look to wrap it up in the same package of proposals as Thomas is talking about.
Yeah, I see no objections. Thomas's recommendations, a lot of people wanting to make sure they see who the murder victim is when you're through, but other than that, I think there's general support. Okay, that's what we'll go with.
Thank you.